fifth case, Bellino v. Mineta. Ms. Carlock-Ginnison.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Megan Gonison, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Joseph Bellino. This matter comes before you on the granting of summary judgment in favor of defendant on Mr. Bellino's rehabilitation claims, which were all summarily dismissed. We brought this appeal because the lower court failed to consider many undisputed material facts in the record which supported Mr. Bellino's claims. The court erroneously determined that the October 21, 2004 letter that Ms. Bem wrote to Mr. Bellino was an offer of a reasonable accommodation. However, the lower court failed to consider many facts, most significantly the fact that Ms. Bem thereafter withdrew the alleged offer merely 5 days later on October 26th. Such withdrawal is analogous to the case of EEOC v. Sears Roebuck, in which the court found that the plaintiff who had been offered a reasonable accommodation was allowed to work in it for a period of time and then it was later revoked was a question of fact for the jury as to whether or not an accommodation had in fact been offered in the first place, given that it was subsequently revoked.
Now, your opponents, of course, argue that the FAA made it clear all along that Mr. Bellino was welcome to go back and work at Tracon as long as he would take the appropriate 1.6% bonus level, not the O'Hare bonus level.
The facts
and that he wanted to work at Tracon, it's just he wanted to work there with more money.
Mr. Bellino wanted to work in a sit-down position, which could have been accommodated at the Tracon.
Well, right, but I guess there is a real sense here of what I'll just call an evolution in what Mr. Bellino was looking for, and his own thinking may have changed over time for all I know, but it appears that for a long time he knew perfectly well that he could go to Tracon, but the terms and conditions of going there were not satisfactory to him, and then maybe he did at some point decide that Tracon would be all right, but by that time, and I guess that's where he is now, as a matter of fact, so this case has got to be about the interim period of time.
The facts that defendants point to say that the offer was always there for Mr. Bellino are two letters that are actually offers of settlement that were put forward during ADR, alternative dispute resolution discussions as part of the EEO process. That is not an offer of a reasonable accommodation, as it required Mr. Bellino to draw all of his EEO claims. The other fact is in April of 2003, he was allowed to work for 4 hours. This is when he first returned to work. This is not a reasonable accommodation for his disability because he needs a sit-down position. Working the 4 hours was simply a restriction that a doctor put on when he returned to work as part of his workers' comp claim. The issue before this court is not whether Mr. Bellino rejected any reasonable accommodation offers, which in fact he never did. Rather, the question that's before this court is whether in fact Mr. Bellino was actually ever offered a reasonable accommodation. There's no evidence in the record that he was in fact offered one for the reasons that I just stated. There was the only potential offer that defendant can point to is this October 21st letter, which, as I stated earlier, was later revoked. This letter was also not an offer of a reasonable accommodation because he was not yet released by OWCP to return to work. Thus, he couldn't have even accepted the offer if he wanted to. In fact, he was told by OWCP not to report to work. And it was when Ms. Bem found out that he had not been released from OWCP that she revoked the letter.
She didn't so much revoke the letter. As I read, what she said was just, you know, you can't come back until you have been certified as able to come back. She didn't want to say something that was contrary to what OWCP was saying.
She ordered Mr. Bellino not to report to work.
Because OWCP had just finished saying, he communicated to Ms. Bem that OWCP said he couldn't return to work or otherwise he would risk forfeiture of all sorts of things.
The only reasonable inference that can be drawn from this withdrawal and her saying do not report to work is the fact that it was taken off the table.
Why is not a much more reasonable inference that she was trying to comply with OWCP? She had, suppose, let's do a counterfactual. Suppose she had said, no, I don't care what OWCP is saying, you have to show up, you know, tomorrow at work. I mean, that would have been a worse command on her part.
Yes, it would have been, Your Honor. But the
how can she be wrong either way? She's wrong if she says, don't come back to work yet, and she's also wrong if she doesn't say that?
When Mr. Bellino returned back from work in October of 2005, and at that point he submitted another letter in which he again requested a reasonable accommodation, Ms. Bem had a duty at that point to tell him that he could go to the TRACON in a sit-down position. She never did that. Nobody at the FAA ever told him in October of 2005 that he could go to the TRACON in a sit-down position that would accommodate his disability. If Ms. Bem truly intended her October 2004 offer to be a reasonable accommodation, there's no reason why she wouldn't offer it again or make it very clear to Mr. Bellino when he wrote a very detailed letter to her asking for a reasonable accommodation that, Mr. Bellino, this offer is still on the table. You can take it if you want it. This offer is a sit-down position that will accommodate your disability. She never did that. This case has gone on for approximately 3 years, in which Mr. Bellino continually wrote letter after letter after letter requesting a reasonable accommodation. The FAA did not engage in the interactive process that is required under the Act, and it's because the FAA failed to engage in this interactive process that Mr. Bellino did, in fact, not receive a reasonable accommodation.
Does the record reflect... How much income Mr. Bellino lost as a result of not moving to TRACON until early 2006, I guess, is when you said in the reply brief is the correct date?
There is not an indication in the record.
Because the reason I'm asking is because the government's brief indicates that at least a lot of the time Mr. Bellino was not working, he was either getting annual leave or sick leave or other forms of leave such that he was, in fact, getting paid.
Well, at some points he did receive those leaves, but at most points he did not.
But we don't know anything in the record about how much was covered by leave and how much was not?
No, we don't have an indication, but we do have in the record the fact that Mr. Bellino had to file for bankruptcy. So he did, in fact, lose a significant number of wages.
Well, we don't know that. I'm sure Mr. Bellino is a prudent manager of his money. I don't know. But some people file for bankruptcy because they just spend more than they take in. Other people file for bankruptcy because they're not taking things in anymore. There are a lot of reasons that could put one in bankruptcy. I'm just concerned that the record is so incomplete on this point.
I believe it is in the record that Mr. Bellino had to declare bankruptcy in order to, because he didn't have any wages coming in. In fact, and it was not because he was spending more than he was making. In fact, he was selling other property that he had, such as cars and rental properties, in order to meet his basic needs of the household. What is also telling in the record is that in Ms. Bem's deposition, she stated that the October 21st letter was not intended to be an offer of a reasonable accommodation. She also stated that it was not under reasonable accommodation. She goes on to try to defend her actions by saying, well, someone who she didn't name told me that this could be construed as a reasonable accommodation. Well, construed means that it could be interpreted as, it could be understood as. By making that statement, defendants are admitting that this is a question of fact that needs to go to a jury. The minute a judge steps into a jury's shoes is the minute that summary judgment is inappropriate. And in this circumstance, it was, because there are so many facts that support Mr. Bellino's claim. It was revoked, he wasn't released by OWCP, and it did not meet his medical restrictions. I see that I'm getting into my rebuttal time, and I will reserve that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lindblom.
May it please the court and counsel. This is just a game for them. I mean, really. He's been at this for years. The FAA, he played games, the district court, and they're doing it here. He knows all about the TRACON. He worked there for 20 years before he went to O'Hare. He works there now. Early on in this process, at the EEO stage, he was begging to go there. He said, it's an extremely reasonable accommodation to transfer me to the TRACON.
But wait a minute, Mr. Linden. I think that just because he knows about TRACON doesn't necessarily, I suppose, know whether there is an open position there at any given time that he would be suitable for, I guess, is the first question. And why, if that's true, as Ms. Ganissim was just saying, why in October of 2005, just to pick that time, when I guess OWCP recertifies him and says, okay, you know, now you're ready to go back to work. What would have been so hard about a simple letter saying, you know, dear Mr. Bellino, this is just to remind you that there, you know, we do have a spot open at TRACON now, and we'd be happy to see you move over there. As, you know, perhaps along the same terms as Ms. Bame's earlier letter, at the regular pay and, you know, et cetera, that applies to TRACON.
He always knew that there was an opening there.
Well, how do you say that? Is there record support for that, that he always knew, or is that just something we're supposed to infer somehow?
Well, they've told him that all along. In April of 2003, they told him that there was an opening there, and that's from our Exhibit 8 at page 3. It's also at page 10 in July of 2003. They had offered it to him. I mean, he had been there. He knows it's a sit-down job. That's why he asked for it.
But I'm just concerned to know about just because there's a vacancy in 2003 doesn't mean there's a vacancy in 2005 or 2008 or any other time unless there's just structural vacancy somehow at TRACON. And I'm concerned that we not just sort of say, oh, you know, this guy knew it all. I don't know whether the vacancies are posted on some website that's relatively accessible to all people at the FAA or what. But I most particularly don't know what's in the record to show whether he might have known or not known.
Well, first of all, I first to answer your last question. The October 2004 letter, they say, I will offer you again this opportunity to go to the TRACON. I mean, and the best evidence, of course, is that he's there now. I mean, even after we won this case on summary judgment, it was still offered to him, and that's where he works now. He works at the TRACON. So, I mean, that's, I don't know what better evidence there is. And as far as the record, I mean, he had been asking for that job for years. But the point is, his version of reasonable accommodation was bringing the higher O'Hare pay over to the TRACON. And as soon as the FAA said, okay, that's fine. We'll send you to the TRACON with your TRACON salary, though. We're not going to pay you the higher salary. He starts backpedaling. Oh, wait a minute. You know,
$210,000 is annual salary at O'Hare or at TRACON?
That's at O'Hare, Your Honor.
And how much less, if it's going to be 10% less or something?
It was actually more about 8% less.
8% less.
Yeah, the whole the reason the salary varied is because the FAA wanted to get more controllers to go to O'Hare as an incentive, and so that was a bonus. And of course,
it's more stressful.
That was the theory. Of course, the CIP or that bonus system is gone now, but that was the main reason that he went there in the first place. In fact,
was the bonus system taken away before he made his transfer? It was early in 07 that he went back to TRACON, wasn't it?
Yes, but the bonus system was taken away in 2000. I believe it was in 2006.
So
shortly,
then there was no advantage being at either TRACON or O'Hare.
At that point, and that's probably why he's there now. There's no financial reason not to go there because everyone's getting paid the same. But the point is, I mean, he's not just an employee of the FAA. I mean, he's the head of the union. He knows where the openings are. He knows the TRACON. He had been there. He knows it's a sit-down job. And, in fact, his union rep, who he did authorize to represent him in this, he put his finger on the issue exactly. You know, he said that there's no disagreement that the TRACON job would have been perfect for him, no problem at all. I think Joe would have taken that in a second. He would have been gone the next day. It was not an issue of whether he was qualified or could otherwise do the job or wanted it. It was a question that came down to the CIP, the bonus. And that's our Exhibit 68 at page 128. And, of course, the irony here is if the FAA did pay him that O'Hare pay over at the Tricon, it would have violated the union agreement, which is the same union, of course, that Mr. Bellino had started. And, in fact, if you want to see more evidence of this game playing, that letter, the October 2004 letter, which is our Exhibit 54, at his deposition, I showed this to him. I said, do you remember getting this letter? No. Never saw it. Never got any offer to go to the Tricon. Then afterward, when he realized I had his response to the letter, he sends in an errata sheet. And he changes his answer from, no, I never saw it, to, yes, I did get it. And his reason, I forgot. I forgot? I mean, this has been at the core of his complaint for years. How could he possibly forget that he got a written offer that he's been asking about? And now they're doing the same thing. Now they're saying, oh, you're right. Okay, I did get an offer. They withdrew it. That's it. It's not withdrawn. There's nothing in the record.
Where does it show that it was supposed to be a standing offer? I guess I'm still stuck in the thought that just because there might be a vacancy in a place at some point, that there might not be a vacancy at other points. Surely, in other circumstances, the FAA would not want to be in the position that once they've made an offer of a particular job at a particular facility, that offer should be regarded as open and good for some enormously long period of time, like 5 years. I don't see how you could manage a business that way.
Well, the Tricon, they were looking for controllers, and Mr. Bellino knew that. He was the head of the union. He had, I'm sure, apprised everybody that they needed people there. He knew that. You know, they had been offering this for years to him. In April of 2003, in 2004.
What about the arguments that some of these offers you're relying on were actually communicated in the course of settlement discussions?
Well, the ADR reference.
ADR process, yeah.
That was in between, see, the EEO process, you know, first there's a chance where they go and see a counselor.
Right.
Between that point and filing the formal EEO complaint is when they had the ADR. So there never was a formal a complaint at that point. They tried to resolve it before they got to that point. And they said, look, if you want to go to the Tricon, we'll send you there, but you're going to be paid the Tricon salary. And that's where things kept blowing up for Mr. Bellino. He didn't want to take, he wanted a higher salary. That's all this is about. He just wanted more money. And so he's playing games by kind of going back and forth. Now he says, oh, it wasn't really a sit-down position. I mean, look at his EEO affidavit. He says, I had offered a reasonable accommodation by suggesting the Tricon. And he goes on to talk about how it's a sit-down job and how he had done it before. He says, a no-brainer. And that, by the way, is our Exhibit 20 at page 5. He goes on to say, it's a no-brainer, extremely reasonable accommodation to transfer me to the Tricon. That's in his EEO affidavit. Then later, he even cites to the regulations, the EEO regulations, when he argues this is a reasonable accommodation. That's our Exhibit 19 at page 4. And the games actually continued through litigation. I mean, they filed a motion to strike during the summary judgment briefing, a motion to strike Mr. Bellino's own affidavits, his own letters, not because they weren't authentic, but because they weren't authenticated. And then we started taking depositions. They made us produce 14 people for depositions. Mr. Bellino attended almost all of those, or I should say slept through them, and was paid his $210,000 salary throughout that. This case is not a real Rehab Act case. It's not a discrimination case or retaliation case. This is really
I think you're letting your emotions get away with you here. I think that the district court finds that he's shown that he's disabled, and there is some question whether the FAA offered or made available a position. Your position is obviously, and the district court accepted it, that yes, the FAA had done as much as it needed to, and there might have been a misunderstanding of law on Mr. Bellino's part at some point about the salary consequences of all of these things. His lawyer points out, if this is, as you say, all a game, it's a game that he played to great detriment to himself if he eventually filed bankruptcy. So I think we need to just sort of step back and look at it as the case, as it's boiled down to at this point.
If there are no other questions, we ask that you affirm the decision of the district court.
All right. Thank you.
There are 3 points that I'd like to address. The first is to remind the court that we maintain that the issue is not whether Mr. Bellino rejected a reasonable accommodation issue. The issue is whether a reasonable accommodation offer was ever made. The second point is that there is evidence in the record that the TRACOM position is not a sit-down position. There are affidavits from people who work there who state that you have to go through training for several months before you can complete some of the TRACOM jobs. That requires walking. There are other jobs.
Would Mr. Bellino have to go through that in light of his tenure at TRACOM before? Would he be required to go through this training again?
Yes, he would. Whenever you're gone from a facility for a certain period of time, you have to recertify there. Anybody who transfers within the FAA always
has
to.
And he was gone during for that prescribed period? For
over 2 years, which would have been much longer.
I gather it's wheelchair accessible.
Yes, and
so you could do the training. If it's wheelchair accessible, you could do the training from a wheelchair.
The problem is that Mr. Bellino was never told that he could use his wheelchair. That was never communicated to him. The only reason he's working at the TRACOM now, in fact, in a wheelchair, is the fact that the new head of the tower offered him a transfer to the TRACOM. This is after Ms. Bem retired. He was told at that point that he could use his wheelchair, and given that he could do that, he decided that he could then accept the offer. There are other questions?
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will have a very short recess.